Good morning.
How y'all doing, church?
Greg looked at me as he walked off stage and said, good luck with that. Thanks, Greg. It is great to be with all of you. If this is your first time here, we are thrilled to have you. It matters that you are here today. It is fall break. We have this one service. We're excited. The message today, we are talking about why, and we're talking about suffering. And that is not the most exciting topic to talk about or to engage with, but prepping for this and through the course of this week, I feel like the Lord has done a work in my own heart, my own life. I believe He is here. He is wanting to minister to each and every one of us. And whether you are suffering or you have, or there's suffering in your future, I don't know what that is. You could be in a happy, good place, especially after last night's game. And but I think you're going to be encouraged. And I think the Lord still has something for you in today's message. And as I was prepping for this, I was reminded of a story about a pastor from Montana who had four young daughters. And as I was reflecting on that, I was like, you know what? He wrote a book, and I've perused it, but I never sat down and started to read it. So I bought it this week, and I started reading into this. And the guy's name is Levi Lusco, and the book is Through the Eyes of a Lion, Facing Impossible Pain, Finding Incredible Power. And the story of his life is that they had four daughters, and 5 days before Christmas in 2012, they lost one of their daughters to asthma. She was 5 years old. And the chapter that gets into that, my kids were in a quiet time yesterday, and I'm reading that chapter, and I just began to weep. I mean, I was sobbing. Like, are my kids gonna come find me? How do I explain this? And it was just so moving and so powerful. And in that moment, the Lord reminded me, that's one. Job lost all his children. And I think what the Lord did in that moment was just bring to light the reality of the book of Job. And we're engaging in the book of Job, which is the story of great suffering. A guy who was godly and righteous in his actions and towards God and his living. And then Satan showed up in heaven and said, well, he's only loving you or following you or obeying you because you've blessed him and you've protected him. And so God says, go ahead, you can do anything. You can't take his life, but he won't curse. Because Satan was like, he will curse you if you take all this away. And so the Lord allows Satan to sift him, and he ends up taking out all of his children, his possessions, his wealth. And I think reading just one chapter of a modern-day story of someone losing a child brought to light the impact, the immensity of what Job must have felt. And I think sometimes we can engage with Scripture, and it's just like, oh, yeah, that happened a long time ago, or that's just a story. No, this is gritty. This is real. And there's people in our community, in our midst, whether in this church or even neighbors or people we work with, who have experienced things, suffering in deep ways. And I wonder if we slow down enough to engage with the people around us. Are we ourselves in suffering? Are there people in our midst who have gone through incredible pain and challenges, who are maybe even living and walking in that to this day, this moment? And how can we, as a community of believers, walk with one another, help one another, and what do we do in our own life if we're suffering like that? And I believe the story of Job has an answer for us that will lead us into, like we said last week, from lament to trying to make meaning out of suffering. That's the natural progression. And where Rick left off last week is he said, I believe that if we become a people who embrace grief and answer or wrestle with the tough questions, we give ourselves the opportunity to be engaged by the living God. And I believe that's true, and we're going to continue with that journey this morning. I'm going to pray as we go forward. Lord, I thank you for the book of Job. I thank you for today's message. Lord, I thank you for how you are above all. Lord, that you are sovereign. Lord, I don't know what we're bringing into this time, where we're coming from. Lord, I believe there is pain. There are questions. There are whys being asked in this room, Lord, and only you have an answer. Lord, would you meet with us this morning? Would your spirit fill this place? Would your spirit move through the scripture and through my words that people could be ministered to and in the time of worship to follow, Lord, would you engage with us in this time? Lord, I pray this in your name, Jesus. Amen. As we continued, or we looked at last week, all those events played out, and the Lord kind of said, go ahead, and Satan began to sift, and all these tragedies befell Job. And then his friends lamented with him for about 7 days, and then they started to engage, and they started giving their thoughts and their understanding. And through all that, it was just a disconnect for Job, because what was happening is this scenario was playing out, that in their mind, if you do good, you receive good. And that's what Job, in his own mind, had. That's what his friends had. That was the balance they knew. This was the equation. You do good, you receive good. You do bad, you receive bad. A person gets what he or she deserves. And so the people, his friends, are looking at the situation, and they're like, wow, you've got a lot of bad. You've received a lot. There has to be something. You've done something. You're a sinner. We don't know what it is, but you're hiding it, and they're pressing in. They keep engaging on this. And Job is sitting there going, yes, I get that I'm receiving all this bad, if you go to the next slide. But he's like, I'm doing good. I haven't done anything. As far as I can tell, there's nothing. And so his mind, he's like, this doesn't make sense, this equation. This is all falling apart in his mind. Job desires, because of this, to make a case before God that he is innocent and doesn't deserve to suffer. And this is the inverse of the message that his friends, but both messages are predicated on the same idea, that a person gets what he or she deserves. And sometimes this is true, but not always. Life is more complicated than that. Both Job's case and the case made by Job's friends assume that suffering is dependent on Job's righteousness or lack thereof. Such a belief can only ever motivate self-reliance, self-righteousness, or independence from God. It makes the results of our life our own making or breaking. And if we persist in this mindset, and you can begin to cut God out of the equation, because he's not even really in here. Like, he may have set this up, but it's really up to you whether you live right or live wrong. You trust in your own righteousness. And this begins to break down in Job's mind as he's looking at this formula is just not working. And the crazy thing is, there's a deeper assumption under all this too, that Job and his friends have a wide enough perspective on life, on how God should run the world, that they can see far enough to make these calls and to understand what's going on. But Job only has a small horizon of a life experience. And when we search for reasons, we simplify God, like Job's friends or like Job accusing God, but based on limited evidence. And for so many people, this is where the story in their own suffering begins to move away from God, where their life arc changes. They begin to make conclusions like, if this is unjust, therefore God is unjust, and therefore unworthy to listen to or follow, if he even exists. And they wander away. They hang it up. God would never cause or even allow this, and therefore he must not exist. Or if God exists, he must not be involved, so what point of pursuing him? I've done this on my own, and I have to figure this out going forward. So many stories, this is the case, where suffering comes up and people begin to move away from God. And the book of Job points us and invites us to recognize our limited vision and lack of clarity, lack of perspective, and honestly bring our pain and our grief to God and trust that God actually cares and knows what he is doing. And as we look, if we pick back up in the book of Job, chapter 13, we're going to see some strength in the midst of this pain, that the direction he chooses is correct, and yet he still has a view that is off focus, that's just slightly distorted based on his own understanding. And the direction that's good is where it says in chapter 13, verse 15, that in light of this arguing that they're saying there must be sin, he's like, I'm innocent, I don't get this, I want to argue my case. He says, though he may slay me, talking about God, though he could kill me, though he may slay me, yet will I hope in him. That's the right direction. In the midst of suffering and our deep questions of why, to go anywhere else but God is to miss the one possibility to get a true answer. He says, I will surely defend my ways to his face. And so that's where it's already a little bit off, because in his view, he's got it all figured out. He's done nothing wrong. There's nothing going on. He must, and he's beginning to push that on to God and to blame. And he says, indeed, this will turn out for my deliverance, for no godless person would dare come before him. Listen carefully to what I say. Let my words ring in your ears. Now that I have prepared my case, I know I will be vindicated. Can anyone bring charges against me? If so, I will be silent and die. Only grant me these two things, God, and then I will not hide from you. Withdraw your hand far from me and stop frightening me with your terrors. So he sees that all these things, he's attributing them to God. And really, it was the story we know is God just removed his hand and Satan was putting this attack on. And then summon me and I will answer, or let me speak and you reply to me. How many wrongs and sins have I committed? Show me my offense and my sin. And I think it's great that he's leaning in and he wants the Lord to answer. And pursuing the Lord, that though he may slay me, yet I will hope in him. That is the right trajectory, yet his view is still skewed. He has lost perspective in the midst of it, and we can easily do this because of suffering. We can lose sight of God and his goodness and what he knows and how he could be in control and behind the scenes, and we lose sight of ourselves even. That our own righteousness can skew our understanding. And a question I have for you is, do you trust in your own righteousness? Do you trust in your own righteousness? We know that the gospel is that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And somewhere in our life, if you're a follower of Christ, you've made that commitment. You've recognized your sin. You've repented, turned from that. But the crazy thing is, as we begin to walk that road and start doing more and more good, we can begin to pick up our own righteousness again. And we find that we're trusting in ourselves. And then when something crazy happens to us, we go, well, why on earth would you do that, Lord? Why has this happened? Because I've got all this track record. And the reality is, it's not always about us. It can be about bigger things going on. And this world is a fallen and broken place. My wife and I have engaged on this in so many situations where we've been around suffering or friends or family. And we come up with a question of why. And we go, you know what? It's not about what we have or haven't done before God. It's a broken world. People die. There's tragedy. There's brokenness. It's a part of life. Sometimes it just is suffering because that is what is in this world. The beauty is God has a world to come where there will be no suffering. There will be no more tears. And we imagine that we want to bring that heaven down in the way that we live, but we're not there yet. And we should long all the more through suffering for what God wants to do. We can look back that he came for us, he died for us, but we know he is there preparing a place for us. And it's that hope that we have. It's hope that isn't yet that we can cling to in the midst of this suffering. But it helps us to turn in to the Lord. Do you trust your own righteousness? The interesting thing about this is, I think sometimes we think we have the right view and we have such a limited perspective. Anyone like to watch stars? Anyone see the Perseids meteor shower this year that happened? Did I say it right, Perseids? I think it is. Happened in, I think, August, and it was really late, so most people weren't going to do it, but there was a moonless light this year, which made it really intense, and I was like, that's it, I'm taking my kids outside and we're doing this, and they're like, best time is like, you know, 11 to 2 a.m., and I'm like, this is going to kill us because I'm going to keep my kids up, but we went for it, and we went out on the driveway, we put a blanket out, and we're looking, and I saw 5. My kids saw none. The crazy thing is one of them was so brilliant, it just streaked right down our street. And I was just amazed by it. And I was like, did you see it? No. And to my kids, I imagine they must think, this is all a joke. Dad's just making this up. There's no stars. He's just pointing at things, saying, did you see it? And that's what it can be like. I mean, does the fact that my kids didn't see what was happening mean it didn't happen? No. It was happening. And sometimes we have a limited view. We can't even see that. Astronomers have known this for years, that they have telescopes and they want to look at stars. And one of the things they talk about is it's called atmospheric distortion. It's the fact that there are bubbles, air pockets in Earth's atmosphere that distort the view. Not only that, there's also like the atmosphere itself protects us from certain rays, Well, they want to see that because they can see clearer the stars from a distance. The only way to do that is you would have to get a telescope beyond Earth's atmosphere. Has that ever happened? Hubble, right? The Hubble telescope, that brilliant like debacle in the 90s where we got it up there and, oh, the lens is wrong. So it took 3 years to send another group, fix the whole thing. But then they did in 93, and the views we got back were incredible. Amazing clarity, the pictures and stuff that happened. It'd be great if I had a few for you right here, right? I don't want you to focus on that. This is just an analogy. So they're 350 miles above the Earth to get that kind of clearance, to be able to see that clearly. And I think that's the point in this, is that you can look and go, what do we need? We need to get beyond ourselves, our limited view, and to begin to go further, to look further. Who's the only one that has a perspective that can help us with the real whys in life? It's God. It's his son. It's Jesus who literally, it says, went beyond the veil, who stands at the right hand of God and intercedes on our behalf. We have got to direct our questions to him. He's the only one that has perspective to see. And the crazy thing is, Hubble, that telescope's 300 miles. So if this is Earth, right here, this mic, and the moon is that mic, Hubble's like right here, you know, just kind of chilling. They're about to send the next one they're working on is going to go up in 2 more years, in I think 2020, and it's called the James Webb Space Telescope. It has a mirror 3 times the size of Hubble, and they're going to send it 3 times beyond the moon and park it in darkness to see a whole lot more than we've ever seen in the universe. And Hubble, just 350 miles above the Earth, there have been 10,000 articles and papers written. Science has been changed because of Hubble. Theories were brought into, like, yes, they were confirmed. Questions were raised as a result of this. Astronomy and science was changed when we got a telescope high enough to see. Imagine what's going to happen with this next one. It's crazy. And yet, we have one that's infinitely further than 3 times past the moon. We have Jesus in heaven who says and invites us to ask him, to talk to him, to have relationship with him. You see, our only hope for real meaning must come from the meaning maker. Our only hope for real meaning must come from the meaning maker. Even if we feel we don't deserve to suffer or that God is to blame, he is still the only one who can answer the questions. He's the one who can answer for us. He's beyond the curtain. He's at the right hand of God. He's waiting to talk to us. And it doesn't mean he's always going to give you the answer or he'll do it in your timing, but he can be with you. You can experience his presence. You can know he's there. And this is the challenge for you, is to stay engaged. Whether you're in a season of suffering or you suffered and you shut part of your heart down, you shut part of your mind down, you closed it off to God, I encourage you, open it up. Stay engaged. Stay engaged in the process. That's what Rick was talking about last week. If we will wrestle with the questions, we can open and possibly experience God's presence in the midst. We can get the answers we long for. Maybe not in this life, but in the life to come. Maybe in 5 years, 10 years, things will begin to make sense. God will bring clarity as to what was the point of that. Why did that happen? And I've seen this in the men and women that I do life with, even in our home group. In our home group in the city, we have multiple families in there. And in the last few years, I've seen men and women who have faced so much in life. Just in the past 5 years, relational issues between husbands and wives, struggles to get pregnant, miscarriages, divorce, babies born, postpartum depression, physical injuries, emotional emptiness, grief, loss, sickness, cancer, so much suffering and heartache and pain. This is just one home group in this church. And yet through it all, they have stayed engaged. They have fought for their faith, the courage they have shown to just show up week after week, to lean into God. You see, our faith works in the fire, not just when life is fun. And we can be hard-pressed and yet not crushed. We can be struck down and yet not destroyed. Because, not because that we know God, but that we trust in God. That though he slay me, yet I hope in him. Do you trust in Jesus? Do you trust Jesus to help you find meaning and find the way? And I think if you're really honest with that question, a lot of people will say no. They don't trust him to find meaning. They've tried it. They've been there. It's too big. It's too crazy. And we have atmospheric distortion in our life. We have got to put our faith and hope in the one who literally is at the right hand of God. It's the only way is to find meaning through the meaning maker. I'm going to give you a verse that I want you to carry with you out of here today. Psalm 71:2, it says, in your righteousness, talking about God, in your righteousness, rescue me and deliver me. Turn your ear to me and save me. In your righteousness, rescue me and deliver me. Turn your ear to me and save me. It's the righteousness of Christ. The guy who I was telling you the story about at the beginning, Levi Lusco, who wrote the story, he also shared a part of how he came through that season. And it took him from Montana to Washington, and he was in Seattle in Pike's Place Market. And he's a bit of a coffee connoisseur, and he ended up going to one of the Starbucks. He said not the original, because you can't get a certain coffee machine there, so he went down the road. But it says this, I just want to read you this, these two pages. As I walked in, the vicious waves of sadness that had been slamming me onto the rocks and stealing my breath ever since I had left the hotel that morning subsided enough for me to compose myself. Outside, the sky remained stormy, but inside me, the downpour had been briefly suspended. I walked in and ordered, then sat down on a stool by the bar and waited for my coffee. I looked around and wondered if anyone knew how much I was hurting. Scanning the room, I saw many people but felt very, very alone. How many times had I sat next to people who were suffering but been completely unaware of the agony they were going through? Nursing my black coffee, I pulled out my phone and navigated to an app that contained a selection of Bible verses to read in the morning and at night for each day of the year. A verse from Romans 3:22 caught my attention. The righteousness of God through faith in Jesus Christ to all and on all who believe. Feeling anything but full of faith, I chose to believe again. Right there on that stool, I took heart, shifting my weight onto God's shoulders. The prayer that followed wasn't pretty or put together. It wasn't a text message from my gut that said, it was a text message from my gut that said I needed help. Please fill me with your spirit and give me strength right now. I believe. Big breath in, big breath out. I read a few more verses, then changed apps and dumped my thoughts into a note, venting my emotions and the things that had lit my mind on fire. I left the cafe. Everything was the same as I went in. Nothing was the same as when I went in. The details of my life hadn't changed, but I had. I think it's such a good picture of what we need to do in times of suffering. This is a pastor. He knows the truth, and yet he's saying, I believe again. And I think there may be people in this room, based on where you are, that you need to do that today. You just say, I trust you again. I choose to believe in you. You are the only one who can make meaning of this. And some of you maybe need to take time and do what he did. Open up a notebook and just put your emotions and thoughts down. Some of you need to do that with someone else, a brother or sister, and just share heart to heart. Some of you, you may need to go to professional counseling. That's why they're there. Someone who can help, who can handle the deeper pain and tragedy of suffering and could help you navigate those unbelievably hard waters to move you in a place that points you back towards Christ. Because Christianity has the only God who willingly takes the blame, even though he doesn't deserve it. That's the crazy thing in all this. That's what's so crazy in the midst of all this. That our suffering, when it doesn't make sense, when it's like, I'm doing good, but I'm receiving bad, I don't understand this, and we have that atmospheric distortion, we can blame the Lord, and he's okay with it. He will take our blame. Because he is righteous. We are not. And if you think about righteousness and what it even means, it's right living, right standing. It's his right living. Even when we're off in our views, we can come alongside him. He will pull us close to him. He can absorb it. He can take all the pain, the hurt, the anger, the frustration, the sadness, the grief, whatever it is, he will take it and wrap his arms around you. Because he chose you thousands of years ago. He made that choice. He doesn't have to make it again. But we need to choose him over and over and over. We can do that through the suffering as we choose the meaning maker. Choose to grip him in your life. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. And not only that we can turn to him with our life one time, but we can do it over and over. With our brokenness, our sin, our selfish ways, our unrighteousness, our questions, our doubts, the problems, the pain, anything that comes, we can go to him. And we're going to have the band come up for another set of worship, and we're going to have prayer ministers in the front. And if there's anything that you need prayer for, or you would like to ask God to pray, we'd love to join you in prayer today to minister in that way. They're going to be in the front, in the back, and up on the balcony. And we're also going to have a time of communion. And I think this is an awesome and fitting experience for today. Because as we're choosing the meaning maker and we're saying that he's the only one who willingly takes the blame, who took it on the cross for us, what we deserve, he took. We're going to remember his life. And at the end of his life, he said, in the meal, he took the bread. And he said, this is my body broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And then he took the cup of wine and he said, this is my blood, a new covenant poured out for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And he invited us to do this, to remember what he has done for us, but also to look at the fact that he has also said he's making a place for us. He's coming back. And he said he will not partake of the cup until we're together again. And we don't understand at all why he's left this broken world in motion. All the sin, all the pain, all the grief. But he's not ignorant of it. He came so that we can have wholeness in the midst of this. And it's only he who can answer these questions. And so as you come and partake of communion, you're going to be receiving the gospel message again of what he's done for you as a reminder. Let me pray as we move into this time. Jesus, I thank you for the book of Job. Lord, I thank you that even though it was clear both he and his friends lacked perspective, Lord, Job's heart was right in wanting to pursue you. To move from trying to make meaning on his own or with his friends to saying, I have to come to you. Only you have the answers I seek. Jesus, I ask that you would meet us in this time. Would your spirit move in our midst? Would you move us to meet with you, the meaning maker, this morning, to stay engaged? Lord, I pray that you would meet us in our pain, in the hurts, the brokenness. Lord, if there is joy even here today, Lord, would you celebrate with us in this time? We thank you. You are here. In your name, Jesus. Amen.